Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it is the high point of my week, I have to tell you, and I am sure of yours as well. Andy McCarthy joins us, the former federal prosecutor, assistant U.S. attorney, and extraordinary national treasure in terms most especially of what he's doing these days, and that is columns at National Review Online and PJ Media and a wonderful stream of extraordinarily important books, including a brand new piece out of Encounter Books entitled Islam and Free Speech. It's an extraordinarily topical and timely book, and we're delighted to have him back to talk about it. Andy, it's good to have you with us, sir. Welcome.
Frank, great to be with you.
You have, of course, been following for a long time the efforts that are being made by assorted Islamic supremacists pursuant to Sharia to restrict freedom of speech, and most especially sort of what the military calls situational awareness about the threat that these jihadists represent. Talk a little bit about how that's been manifesting itself prior to the Charlie Hebdo and Garland attacks, Andy, and who's behind it?
Well, Frank, the attack on our free speech, unfortunately, is backed not only by the suspects you would suspect, which would be, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, this 57 Islamic government bloc from the United Nations, which is actually the largest voting bloc in the United Nations. You'd expect them to be behind it because their mission is to enforce Sharia law, to impose it and its strictures on the whole world, and the thing that they've always prioritized most is free speech, because if you can win that one, then everything else follows. The really discouraging thing is that they have been partnered with by the current administration, and particularly the State Department when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and they joined together to basically come up with a United Nations Human Rights Resolution 1618, which purports to make illegal any speech or expression that would create hostility, or I guess they put it, incite hostility to religion. And of course, there's only one religion that they actually have in mind. They're quite hostile to other religions. But it's basically our own State Department, which has been involved not only in the legal architecture of free speech, that is to say, to create real problems for free speech and suppression of free speech. But Mrs. Clinton also went so far as to say that if the legal attack on it would not work or had problems because of the First Amendment, that the government would rely on old-fashioned shaming, which creates the what ought to be to people, I think, the frightening specter of the government using extra-legal pressure on people to stop them from not just gratuitous insult. This is not about, can you draw a cartoon that shows the Prophet Muhammad's turban turning into a bomb. This is any critical examination of Islam, regardless of whether what's discussed is true or not.
In your study of this, and including in your new book, Islam and Free Speech, have you had a chance to connect dots between the role that Hillary Clinton played when she was Secretary of State and the counsel that she might have been getting from this Muslim Brotherhood-tied woman, Huma Abedin, who was her deputy chief of staff, in this vein particularly?
The pamphlet that I've just done in the Broadside series that you were kind enough to mention for Encounter doesn't delve into that aspect of it. Just so listeners understand, the Broadsides are a series of pamphlets. It's almost like the folks at Encounter want to bring back something like the Federalist Papers, not the great genius behind those and quality behind them.
Well, I would disagree about that.
Well, we can aspire to it, but the point is to try to do short, topical things that for readers to be able to spend 20 minutes or a half hour and really get their brains around important issues of the day. So as much as we'd like to get into the weeds on everything, we do that in other places. But with respect to this particular one, what I've tried to address is the broader challenge to free speech, because I think the unfortunate thing, and the reason that people like Pamela Geller have done, you know, such heroic work, is that the only time that we ever get any attention to this issue is when some great provocative thing comes up, whether it's the cartoons or the, you know, this artistic contest that they had down in Texas, or the like. And I think it fools people sometimes into thinking that all that's at stake here is, you know, the ability to write cartoons that are unflattering or gratuitous insults, when what we're talking about is really a thoroughgoing attack on not only speech but artistic expression.
Andy, let me turn to one other thing before we have to let you go, and that is something that you've been mulling, as have I, particularly since the response by former Florida governor and expected presidential candidate Jeb Bush to your friend Megyn Kelly at Fox News about Iraq and whether he would, knowing what we know now, do what his brother did. Talk us through that issue and where you come down on the right answer to the question.
Well, I really think, Frank, that the, you know, it's unfortunate that a debate which ought to highlight something that's very important and maybe spark a question about the most important aspect of the global war, which is what is our understanding of it, of who we're fighting and why, what is our strategic vision of the war. And if this had tripped into that conversation, it would be really helpful. What it's instead kind of reduced to is, you know, first of all, the premise of the question, which is, you know, if we knew then what we knew now, well, you know, with respect to almost anything in life, yeah, you know, I mean, if you knew then what you know now, you wouldn't do half of what you did in your life. But the other thing is, and this is the most alarming to me, it really has reduced down to the narrative about the Iraq war, which, you know, apart from its serial inaccuracies, is really beside the point, which is, you know, did Saddam have WMD and that's weapons of mass destruction, and did Bush have, President Bush have, you know, reasonable grounds to think that he did, and was it a mistake when we found out that he didn't have the programs and stockpiles that we expected? And while that's an interesting issue, as you and I know, because we've been discussing this for years, a number of us never thought that WMD was close to the most important issue. I mean, what was going on in the post 9/11 environment was a war waged by a conglomeration of Islamic terror networks and state sponsors against the West. And Iraq was certainly on the list of the state sponsors, but so was Iran. So the only way that you, I think, can make an assessment about whether something was a mistake or not is if you consider, based on what you knew at the time, whether it was likely or unlikely to empower the enemy that we were up against. So to me, the big thing about the Iraq operation is, I always thought Iraq was the next step to Iran, because I believe the Bush Doctrine, and I still believe in it, when President Bush articulated it, and that was that we had to treat state sponsors of the jihad as if they were the jihad, which means we needed to squeeze those regimes until they either reformed or were gone. And to me, Iran was at the top of the target list. So you can't really judge Iraq on the basis of WMD. You have to judge Iraq on the basis of, did we have a plan when we went in to deal with its neighbor, Iran? And if we didn't, did we raise the risk that we were making our enemy as a totality more powerful because we were, by removing Saddam, creating space that Iran would not only fill, but fill in a way that was even more problematic to the United States.
Andy, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you very much. It's great to have you back, and congratulations on the new broadside from Encounter Books, Islam and Free Speech. Andy, we'll talk with you again next week, I hope. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll talk about the Confucius Institutes. Are they Chinese influence operations here in America? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.